So what we said last time with regard to the cure is that what the cure shows is that the cure simply shows is a phenomenon called mind, which we call mind, which is not subject to the laws of the rest of the creation. And that's basically the idea. And once a person has that concept, he understands why Bechira really is actually what is the conclusion that you must come to. You must come to that conclusion. Because since, by definition, it's different, so you can't apply the rules and that the laws that operate with regard to the rest of the creation. And that's really the concept of Tzelem Elokim, Nasa Adam Etzalmeinu Kedmoseinu, which means that there's a separate kind of phenomena, and it's a different qualitatively differentiated entity. Okay. Yeah, and that's why I mentioned also that even the Kabbalistic term Chelek Alakami Mal could be understood in that way. Not the way people who have no business studying Kabbalah understand it, to mean that the Chalil, I mean, you're almost not allowed to say it, that it's a part of God. I mean, it's absolute Avodah Zarah. Absolute Avodah Zarah, and it's a denial of the Achdus Hashem. It's a denial of Achdus Hashem. But what it could be, the way we interpret it, could very well mean that Chelek Elokamimal means that, the way we explained it, it means that is that man has a part of him that's not subject to the laws of the creation, of the rest of the creation. That's what it means. Mimal, it means something above the creation. That's what it means. Okay. It means a part of man that was given to him by God that is not under the laws of the... comes from a higher type of existence. Okay? Now, what I wanted to do was I wanted to show, to demonstrate that from a logical standpoint, you must say that there is such a thing in man. Okay? That there is such a thing in man. Because someone will say, well, look, you know, how do we know that there's such a thing? So I wanted to show that it's something which of necessity you must say exists. Okay. Question is, how do we prove it? All right. Let me. The proof is abstract, but it's pretty short. Okay. So let's just take it slow. All right. Let's say, for instance, I want to understand how. I want to understand how a refrigerator operates. Okay? So, if I have a refrigerator and I see it it works in a certain way, operates certain way, according to certain... It's not haphazard, but it has a certain... it operates by certain fixed laws. It presents itself as a harmonious, functional apparatus. So it must be working under certain fixed laws. Now, the only way I can understand the refrigerator is by understanding it in terms of a framework that's outside the refrigerator. Okay? Do you understand what I mean? In other words, there's no way to explain the refrigerator if you never went into principles that are beyond, that exist, that are expanded beyond the refrigerator. That's why you explain how it works. How does the refrigerator work? Well, let's see. It's operating it has electricity. Okay, well, what is electricity? You must be able to explain in some way what electricity is. Or it operates on, it operates by gas or by whatever principles it is that it uses. In order to understand the refrigerator, you must make recourse to universal principles that are outside the realm, that are outside this refrigerator. If you did not go outside the refrigerator, you could never understand the refrigerator. It'd be impossible. Okay? So when you understand something means taking a thing and explaining it in terms of a wider range of phenomena and showing that this thing partakes of that wider range. But if you don't have the principles of the wider range, you can never understand the thing itself. Okay? Is that point clear? Okay. All right. Now, the thing is, we say that the human mind can understand the universe. All right? If we say the human mind can understand the universe, can comprehend the universe, it means that the human mind, of necessity, must have a greater framework than the universe itself. You see? Because in order to understand something, the thing has to make sense within a greater frame. So that means that mind, by definition, must exist outside and as a greater framework than the thing that you're studying, which is the universe itself. Okay? So therefore, mind can never be just a part of the universe. Otherwise, it couldn't comprehend the universe. Do you follow? Yeah, it's not a quantitative thing. It means to say it's a qualitative concept. Exactly. The act of comprehension means that I have a frame which is greater than the material world. Now, you understand what I'm saying? Now, if the person assumes that, any scientist that's pursuing knowledge and is pursuing an understanding of the universe must maintain that mind, which he's using to comprehend it, is of something greater than the universe itself. And the greatest absurdity would be to say what the evolutionists say, that the human mind evolved. That would be completely impossible, because that would mean that it's simply an object which is a result of certain effects of the laws of nature. If that's, in other words, it's an object that was formed by the effects of certain forces, if that's the case, it is actually a small part of the entire universe, in which case it would not be capable of any comprehension practically at all, certainly not to comprehend the universe itself. You follow what I mean? It would of necessity have to be something which was formed by impacts of certain laws within the universe. But then it couldn't be greater than the universe. It has to be smaller. It has to be a very small component of the universe. You follow what I mean? Okay. It's a framework which is more expansive, and because it's more expansive, it's has to be of a higher nature. It has to be of something different. Because how could these laws make sense to this thing called mind? You follow? So this thing called mind must have something which is greater, a greater framework which can contain these laws, within which these laws can make sense. Okay? So it's an abstract proof, but it's a very short one. Okay. That's correct. It would follow from this that you could never understand the mind itself. And the truth is, and it would follow from this that mind must have been given to man by something outside the universe. Okay? Namely, of course, God. But that it follows. And I want to tell you something. All the philosophers, the philosophers, Berkeley, Hume, all these modern philosophers have missed this point. This point has escaped them. They always, in the process of trying to deny mind, the empiricists especially, the empirical approach is completely the opposite. The empirical approach is an attempt to say that man is just a sum of sensations which have come about through the universe itself, you see. Now, empiricism, basically, as I told you, I mentioned once before, that empiricism is self-annihilating, because you cannot say that you're an empiricist, because that's not empirical. That itself can never be empirical. This contradiction, by the way, it's always the same contradiction. It's the same contradiction. For instance, the skeptics. Skepticism is self-annihilating also. Of course, you say they're saying that there's no such thing as knowledge. Well, is that knowledge? It's always self-annihilating. But I found that this contradiction, as a matter of fact, I mean, the greatest minds somehow slip into this contradiction without noticing it. And I think I want to mention Darwin. Darwin one time said that he says the idea of God appeals to my mind, because he realized that he's just speaking about the small, very small area of the universe known as this planet. And the certain activities and effects that took place in this small planet. But in terms of the universe, you know, his theory has nothing to do. It doesn't shed the light of the universe. So he said it does seem, when you study the universe, that there's something akin to mind out there that is evolved, that, you know, that produced this thing. He says, so my mind tells me that there's such a thing as a God. But then he says, but I can't trust my mind because my mind evolved from an ape. So how can I trust an ape mind? You see? The only question is, how does he know his mind evolved from an ape? You see? There he trusts his mind. So people, even great thinkers, for some reason, always get caught up in this contradiction. Always get, there's another one. I mean, at one time I was speaking with someone. We were going to put together a list of all these, you know. Even as great a mind as Bertrand Russell, who was really a phenomenal logical thinker, but he got caught in the same trap also. Because when he was on relativity, when he wrote on relativity, so he says, why is it that the human mind can't grasp relativity? So he says, because the human mind is a product of evolution, and for survival, in order to survive, there's no need to have a conception, abstract conception of time-space, which really is counterproductive. In other words, what you really need is just the concept of time and space. There's no need for this abstract time-space concept. Okay? So therefore, he says, the human mind doesn't think naturally in terms of relativity. There's only one question. How could he understand? What is he using? See? Yeah. So I mean, it's a funny thing. And Russell usually is a guy that picks out these self-contradictions, but he himself fell into that trap. Actually, de Broglie, who Einstein considered one of the greatest physicists in the world, I found later that he uses this point precisely to prove that the human mind cannot have been a product of evolution. Because he says that it's impossible, because he says otherwise you cannot understand relativity. Says there must be something else. Mind is something else. You see. And the Wallace, by the way, Wallace, who was Wallace and Darwin both came to the same conclusions, same theories. Darwin became more popular, Wallace didn't. But at the same time, this is one of those cases where you have people come with the same theory at the same time. But Wallace stopped when it came to the human mind. Wallace said the human mind can't be explained. So he had the correct... Darwin got very upset and wrote him a letter, and he says, if that's the case, my whole theory is no good because you're not letting me explain everything with my theory. He's very upset. It's an interesting letter if you read it. But the Wallace actually came to the correct conclusion. In my opinion, probably the reason why Darwin is more popular is because it caters to an atheistic approach, which scientists tend to, as we spoke about last week, have a predilection for. But the... But the truth of the matter is that I started to notice all these contradictions in philosophers and thinkers. I noticed it's always one thing. The moment a person tries to deny the intrinsic quality of mind, he's going to get caught in that contradiction. That same contradiction we spoke about with Popper last week. Same thing. The moment you try to do that, you're going to get caught right in it. Because if you deny mind, then what are you denying with? You're denying with mind. But that, where did that come from? That you're never going to be able to explain. So the human mind is incomprehensible. It remains an incomprehensible phenomena. We could know, the only way we could know about it actually is like the Rambam says, insofar as the mind is capable of perceiving God, which is through negative knowledge, that's the only way really you can perceive the human mind, only through negative knowledge. You know what it's not. You can never know what it is. There's no apparatus in the world that could span it in which you could place the human mind so that you can comprehend it. It's a logical impossibility. What Einstein meant by that, Einstein said something different. He said that says the most incomprehensible thing about the universe is that it's comprehensible. He means to say that why should it be that thing out there works in line with what I have in here? He says, like, how could you explain that coincidence? It's a pure coincidence. Why should it be? Why should that coincidence be? He says, like, it's the most unbelievable thing. But it works. You know, it is true. It is so. So, I mean, according to Yad, it's not incomprehensible, because that's the whole basic first parsha in the Torah. I mean, that's the Nasarim Tzalmeni Kedmusayna. That's what the Pasuk says, that this comes from a different source. It's differentiated from the rest of the creation. If you look carefully at the first parsha, you'll see that the moment it comes to Adam, a different kind of psukim. in the first parasha, different kinds of sukkah. Is the Totsi Haaretz, Nefesh Chaya, Behemoth, is all in the in Yom HaShishi. But then Adam is a break. Different thing. Nase Adam, Bitzalmeinu, Kidmasenu, Vyud, Vidgasayam, Vajmain. Whole different expression. Because the source is a different source. It's a different phenomenon. And that's why that goes in line with the whole free will question. It's tied, the two questions are tied together, bound together. Because once a person realizes what mind is, he knows immediately it's not, he can't subject it to the laws of, that govern the universe. Whether you want to say those laws are laws of chance or whatever kind of laws they are, the human mind cannot be subject to them. Yes. A question about God's knowledge is not one that we could deal with, because the moment you start dealing with it, you're going to try to apply things that are true in terms of human knowledge, which is not appropriate. So that's what the Rambam says, man is incapable of doing that. The problem you raise, you're incapable, man is not capable of handling. Because you're going to have to, in order to do it, you're going to have to apply certain concepts from yourself. And where are you going to get these concepts from? So it's not, but you're a created being, and it's inapplicable to the creator, because the creator is a source beyond the creator. You're still a created being. I mean, I want you to understand that. That's what I'm telling you. Chelik al kam amal, if you say that it has to do with part of the crazy idea that they have, that I don't want to say it, but that's clearer. You see, that's clearer. But the if you say it's something which is above the creation, you see, in a certain sense, yes, that's correct. But it still is a created thing. It's still, the human mind is still a created thing. God is uncreated. God is, the idea of creation is inapplicable to God, completely inapplicable. And that's why venturing into the area of metaphysics, all Chachmei Yisrael, Pe'echot, whether the Kabbalists or all Chachmei Yisrael have agreed that a person is the most dangerous area, and it's not an area that a person should venture into, and or to hope to be able to obtain knowledge in, because it's something which takes man beyond, in an area that is so abstract that he can't make recourse to anything that he knows. See, certainly a physicist would not be able to do this at all, because even physicists, whenever they explain something, they try to make recourse to some kind of a thing in order to explain it, because it has to be explainable in terms of something. But God is God is outside that realm, the whole thing's inapplicable, so you can't ask such questions. There is a way into metaphysics where you can, through pure abstraction, you can gain knowledge, but that the gates to that road are closed, except for a few individuals, and those few individuals know who they are, and they know and they know that they could see beyond this. But Chazal have sworn into secrecy. I mean, you can't. They're not allowed to discuss it in public. They're not a Mishnah in Darshan. You can't. So that kind of knowledge is that kind of knowledge. You cannot convey that kind of knowledge to another person. If a person should have such a knowledge, that's what the Rambam had such a knowledge. The Rambam wrote, if you look at his introduction, a lengthy introduction, where he says he's concealing the major ideas. He's concealing. He says he's only writing them in a way that the person that is an individual who is on that level will understand it. And the same thing with the Ibn Ezra. The Rambam said about the Ibn Ezra, he says, the greatest Pirush HaChumash, he says, you will not understand his secrets unless you're on his level. And that's because a person who is not capable of such abstract thought, he can't cope with it. So that's my answer to your question. Yes, it's exactly. I'll tell you one thing though. Many of the concepts in the Mara Nevuchim, where people misunderstand them, they think he's being apologetic. He's not being apologetic. He's being rational. You see, where he explains that a lot of the problems, a lot of the questions that people raise about God stem from one source, that they're trying to apply to God concepts which they've derived from the created world, which is inapplicable. So people think it was apologetic. People think, he's saying, you can't apply this. God is beyond my knowledge. And then he's not saying like a stupid religionist. It says, anytime you ask me a question, well, that's God. I can't understand it. That's not what the Rambam's saying. Rambam's saying something. Rambam's saying that logically the question, if you look carefully, he says logically this question is contingent upon a certain kind of analysis which is inappropriate by definition to that which you are trying to analyze, which is God. It's a totally different thing. Okay. There's a certain scientific arrogance. I don't know where it comes from. It's hard for me to understand. When I read scientists, and big scientists, who say that they are sure that they're going to come up with a theory. They have this conviction that they're going to come up with a theory and explain the whole universe. I don't know how a person could possibly, on rational grounds, could support such a concept. It's silly, basically. It's like taking a four-year-old. You know, you take a look, you want to buy a four-year-old a puzzle, so there's a sign there that says, this puzzle for four-year-olds, you know. You can't give a four-year-old will never be able to work out a puzzle for a 20-year-old. I mean, I don't care how bright he is, it's still it's a certain inherent limitation of the species, you know what I mean? If you don't want to use four-year-old, use two-year-old, whatever, there are inherent limitations, you understand what I'm saying? Now, how does anyone know that the human mind is not simply like a child compared to the task that it has before it? I mean, it's a wild, arrogant assumption that scientists make. But scientists make these arrogant assumptions. I mean, there was a time in the 30s where a group of scientists, some of the biggest ones, said that in 6 months the world of physics is finished. Explain everything. And Newton's time, they thought everything. That's it. Newton's time was convinced that now it's just a matter of complications, and God is like a great computer worker, and everything that you just have to put in enough data, and then you're gonna have you can know every piece of information in the universe. Turned out it wasn't that simple. It works with certain kind of concepts, different kind of concepts, abstract ideas, and it turned out that Newton's formulas were completely false. I mean, his formulas dealt with time and space, and he didn't have the proper concept of time and space, so the formula itself is intrinsically lacking. Of course, it's going to work on the scale that he was operating with, but that's for a different reason, not for the reason that he thought. So even though, again, I mean, I see just strange things among great physicists to try to say, well, Newton's theories are also correct. I mean, they're also correct. You can't also be, not also. They may be practical if you want to be an engineer, it'll work. But as it can't also, I mean, if it's a different concept, so then this concept's wrong. I mean, that's it. It's very simple. But you can't trust, a physicist you can trust within his realm. The moment he steps out of his area, he's like anybody else, okay? In fact, I mean, Weinberger talks about this. He's Steven Weinberger. He says, you can't believe a physicist that doesn't believe ideas exist. I mean, they have to exist in some way. I mean, it explains everything. I mean, it doesn't exist. I mean, it might not exist like this table exists, but it's got to exist in some way. It's like, I mean, it's an impossible thing to deny. I mean, to deny that, so what is it? I mean, okay. I one time gave a long shiur on this whole area, but it's on tape already, on how ideas exist and what way they do exist. And how is it that you can have a theory that is disproven, and somehow or other you have to say that the person who had a theory had some kind of a knowledge? I mean, what kind of knowledge do they have? That's a different. I gave it the different issue. I gave it. It's on the tape somewhere. I think it had to do with the Rambam's concept of the Kruvim, if I'm not mistaken. Was tied to the concept of the Kruvim. Okay. I mean, Adam's asking the question: do I have to maintain that you can't understand the universe if I say the mind is something greater than the universe? It's not necessarily so for two reasons. One reason it's not necessarily so is because you could say that the element of mind is above the universe, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have enough of that in order to be able to comprehend the most abstract points. In other words, it could be like, for instance, you take a person that has a good lamed, but then you take him into a Reb Chaim, and he can't follow the abstraction. He could be a terrific lamed, but this point is too abstract. Now, it's not that he's lacking. It's not that he's lacking, so to speak, mind. He's lacking in mind, but he's not lacking a mind. Do you know what I mean? So it could very well be, like I said, with the puzzle, that mind is of a nature which spans the phenomena. But you have to have enough of it in the proper proportion to be able to. Can the human mind developed enough to handle the problem of the universe? You see, but I would say that mind, as someone said before, as Shea said before, mind is qualitatively differentiated. But still, just because it's qualitatively differentiated doesn't mean that you're going to be able to handle this problem. It might be too complex, too abstract, a little more abstract than the mind can handle. That's one reason why the mind not be able to handle it. There's another reason is that the information that the mind gets is from the senses. It's always from the senses. And the problem is when you deal with phenomena that you are very limited in your view of the universe, because when you get down to it, it boils down to basically the eyes. I mean, that's the only tool you have. And then all the instrumentation that you're using has to come back to the eyes, otherwise you can't have any knowledge of it. And it could very well be that, and I don't know why people don't seem to think this is a serious problem. To me, it seems like a very serious problem. It could very well be, some philosophers have raised the point, though, that namely Immanuel Kant raised the point, but it's a good point. The point is that since our knowledge and our perception is so limited that the eyes directly really don't tell us that much, and then you're going to have instrumentation which just translates into some way that it affects the ocular nerve, which means that your apparatus is intrinsically limited. And then also, when you're using instrumentation, every time you're using something, you're really one step away, and it could be a loss process in the through the mechanisms, and you don't know whether the whole thing is really enough to give you a view of the phenomena. I mean, then you have certain intrinsic problems. You have problems when you investigate. The only way we investigate things, it has to do with the eye, because the way we investigate things is with light. Light hits something, bounces back, and reflects upon your eye. But then when you get down to the world of a subatomic world, what happens is light isn't really any good anymore, because when light hits something, it doesn't bounce back and moves the thing, it interacts with the thing that it hits. So now what you get back in the as a return message is not what that object is, but an interaction between that object and the light. And already you have a distortion. Now how is that object without that interaction? There's no way for man to know. So it comes out that your senses are self-limiting, really. Your senses are very limiting. That's the problem you deal with the uncertainty principle and other problems of physics. And it seems to me these problems should somehow or other draw an intrinsic limit. Unless you want to go along with the physicists that try to say that this itself is the universe, which doesn't make sense to me, but they try to work around this because it's a tremendous philosophical problem. But the human mind doesn't seem to accept their solution too well, because the human mind seems to say that just because you can't test it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Okay? It's a man always, as Kahelis points out, man has an emotion, what Kahelis calls modernity. You know, I mean, if you look at what the Psukim is, modernity. Man always thinks that this is the, now the whole world was only created just to reach this point, and we got the point, and that's it. This is it. This theory can't be wrong. This is, we finally arrived at the theory. That has always been proven wrong. That theory has always been proven wrong. But there are powerful emotions here. And like I say, I mean, you can only trust the Chacham in the area of his Chachma. He goes out of his area of his Chachma, he's just like anybody else. He's prone to the same kind of crazy emotions and conclusions, and that's an important thing to remember. It's an important thing to remember. I think that's one of the purposes of Chochmas Satara is to give a person the proper tools to make headway in these areas. To make it certain, to make headway. When I say to make headway, I don't mean to span in Yadus. The difference between, there were religions, by the way, that were based upon the idea of intellect. It's an interesting thing. There were religions that recognized mind. They recognized the human mind as the most unbelievable thing, and they built religions around the human mind. There's only one difference between their religions and ours. In their religions, they were looking for a certain fixed kind of activity for the mind. You see? So there is no such thing, like in Buddhism, looking for a certain kind of something the mind can focus on and be entranced by. There's no such thing. The mind, our religion is mind, but it's an infinite process. The mind is always new ideas, moving, never gets to the end, but it's always in the process. That's the true religion. That's the, it's a hard blow for me, a hard blow for the ego, but that's the reality of it. Puts a person, it humbles a person, but it's the only way that a person can make headway in these areas. Let me leave it at that. I mean, a great chacham makes great headway, and a smaller person, smaller. But the beauty of the system, of course, is that even a small person, through nevuah will not stray and just go into crazy kinds of philosophy, spend his life as a small life and living with wrong ideas. He knows the Torah told him he has to rely on the Chacham, so he has his sights are correct, and whatever knowledge he can gain, he gains. So it's that's the system of Yadis. Okay. Said last time was, it shouldn't be misunderstood, what I said last time, and also, you give me a Ram Chelag Aleph. What I mentioned last time was that it's one of the most astounding things, as far as I'm concerned, of Yadus. And that is that Yadus, and when we say Yadus, of course, we mean to understand the Torah according to Torah Shabbat Peh, the method of understanding the Torah. That Chazal say that the pasuk v'atem ha'devekim bar Hashem alakechem chayim kolcham hayom, and the pasuk which states liavos at Hashem alakecho ledovka bo, all right. So Chazal say on both of those psukim, they say v'chi efsher laadam l'dzgmar is in kufshir alafam bezing subas v'chi efsher l'dvuki b'shchina v'chi efsher laadam l'davik b'shchina. So the Gemara says, "Ala kol amesi bito l'tamid chacham, v'osa parkamati l'tamid chacham, v'amahana v'midachom menachasav, ma'ila l'kasav kilu medavu v'shchina." Okay. So the Gemara says that a person that marries his daughter to a talmid chacham, or also vice versa, marries the daughter to a talmid chacham, or he does business with a talmid chacham, or he assists the talmid chacham financially for his nechasim. So it says Ki'ilu Medabek Veshchina. Alright? So Alright. So that's what it means. That's what it means. Vatem advekim barashem alekechem. Chayim kulchem hayom. Rashi says, Hagidei dibukon shel talmidei chachomim yizku lechios. Okay. So the Gemara takes the pasuk out of its literal meaning. It does not mean to be medabek by Kadosh Baruch Hu literally. It's not what it means. This is what the Chazal said, but what does it mean? It means to say to be medabek with Talmidei Chachamim. Okay, to do business for them, help them in business, give them investments. Basically, is what the Gemara means. So what are Chazal saying basically? The Gemara says Chi Efshel LaAdam LaDavik B'Shchina. In other words, it's impossible to have Dveikus BaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an amazing Gemara. Such a phenomenon is impossible. It does not exist. So how can the Torah tell us to do it? So the Gemara says what the Torah really means is to that word LiDavik does not mean with HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. But it means via the Talmid Chacham. Okay, why? Why is it better via the Talmid Chacham? Why is that better? How does that make it better? So the answer is the word devekin, or the dovkabo, the word dovek, means to cling emotionally, an emotional type of relationship. That's what it means. That's what devekus means. So that's why the Gemara says that it's impossible for a person to have an emotional relationship with God, basically. So, because Kedosh Shem HaLekech HaYesh Ochloh. So, alright, now, so what does it mean? So it means a person can have an emotional relationship with a Talmid Chacham, and via that emotional relationship, he reaches God. Why? Because through his friend is a Talmid Chacham. The friend's a Talmid Chacham. He talks to him, likes him, he's friendly with him, and because of that emotional friendship, he learns from the Talmid Chacham's Chachma, and that's how he reaches God, through Chachma. Okay? That's what the Gemara means. So the Gemara took the Pasuk away from its literal meaning. Cannot be explained literally. Okay? So the question, of course, is what does it mean when we say that you cannot have an emotional relationship with God? What does it mean? Does it mean that the emotions are not involved? That's not true either, because in Avas Hashem is a state
which involves the emotions, without a doubt. If there are no emotions involved, there's no Avas Hashem. Avas Hashem involves the emotions. So what is the difference between Chazal didn't find any difficulty in Avas Hashem. They didn't find any difficulty in Avodas Hashem, Kiddush Hashem. All these mitzvahs are fine. But the Davek Ba'Kadosh Baruch Hu, there they found a difficulty. And by the way, this Chazal is not just a Maimar Chazal drasha. It's a Chazal which is this is the only pshat. And in Sefer HaMitzvahs, you look at the mitzvahs, you will not find in Sefer HaMitzvahs that's interpreted in any other way. That's a matter of fact. The mitzvah is lidavek b'talmidei chachamim. The loom of the Maaseyim. I don't know the exact question. Right? So you see that is the interpretation. Okay? It's not a drush. Yeah. So what's the difference between these two things? Okay? What's the difference between why is it impossible to have an emotional relationship with God, and yet we say in Avas Hashem the emotions are drawn. The emotions have to be involved. Okay. See, the difference between Ava and Dveikus is that in Ava, and Ava, the mushal is used, the mushal of Anisha is used, because that's the strongest human expression of Ava. But in the mushal is only used for one half of the phenomenon, only for one half. It means like this. It means that a person is in a state of love. So there are two things that occur in the person. One is he has an object that he is attached to. That's one thing. But the second, attached to emotionally. But the second thing is that he is drawn towards the object. He's drawn towards the object. So when the Chazal saw the pasuk v'ahavtei et Hashem elokecha. I don't mean when they saw the pasuk, but there's always interpretation from Sinai. I'm just speaking that way. But the pasuk of Ahavta Esav Hashem Elokecha did not pose any problem. Why? Because it meant to be drawn towards God. Sheifa, really, it's sheifa lamakom. That's how the Rambam describes it. That's what the Sifri says. Not just the Rambam, it's the Sifri, it's Rashi, it's everybody. It's not a machlekes here. So the phenomenon of Avas Hashem is understood as Misave Taiva Gedola Leida Hashem Agadol. Okay? That's what the Rambam says, and that's what it means. It means he's drawn. He's drawn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's drawn towards something which he does not know in any positive way. Only that he exists, you see, and that he's the source of all chokhmah, and he's drawn towards that source. But there is no object. But you cannot explain that grammatically in terms of ledovka. Ledovka bo is impossible to explain. Because dibuk means two things, two objects that are clinging together. There's a mutual bond between two objects. That, the Gemara says, that's what Chazal says is impossible. The object of God should be connected to the object of man? That's an impossibility. You can't construe that in any framework. That's what the Gemara says. This is impossible. Is it any?
Yeah, but
Chazal
didn't say.
That's why Chazal say Ludovka Bo is a problem. Avas Hashem is no problem because the component of Vava that we're relating to is the Sheifa, the draw. That's correct. Because Chazal says it's a pasuk. What is the next pasuk? Means the Talmud Torah. So that's why that pasuk follows the first pasuk, because that's the method. So the Torah really describes what the method is, and there's no problem over there. But dibuk is impossible, because dibuk means like take two boards and you glue them together. That's dovuk. That's impossible. That means God as an object should be attached to man. That's eish ochlo. There's no common grounds. It's impossible. Impossible, right. Exactly. So that's why Chazal say that Ladovka Ball means it is possible through somebody else. The Talmud Chacham and the person can be attached because they're both people and they both have emotions and there could be a tie between them. They could be bonded together in an emotional relationship. Okay? And through that bond, through that relationship, the person becomes related to God through the Chachma of the Talmud Chacham. Okay? So what are Chazal saying basically? Basically Chazal are saying that what the Torah was machayev in such a thing. The Torah apparently was machayev a person. It means to say that if a person, it's not an optional thing. The Torah is saying that what God did when He gave the mitzvos, what He did was He said that man has a need for an emotional relationship. So the pasuk said that emotional relationship should be used for God. But how could a person use that emotional relationship for God? Well, what's the answer? The answer is through the medium of the Talmud Chacham. And that is called Dveikus B'Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's Dveikus B'Kadosh Baruch Hu. You see? Yes. The Tzelem Elokim cannot know God for a simple reason. Because the knowledge that he has is only of the created world. That's what it means. All knowledge that man has is only of the created world. And there's no way that from the created world you can go back to the Creator. There's no logical way to go past that barrier. It's completely impossible. But however, you see, it's an interesting thing. You can't go past the barrier in terms of having a knowledge of God. But you can go past the barrier in terms of knowing that He exists. That's an amazing thing. That is an amazing thing. That's an amazing thing. It's amazing. It's an amazing thing. But in science, you have a similar kind of phenomena. You have a phenomena where a scientist might not know the solution to a problem, but he knows that it exists. You see? It's the same kind of a thing. He knows, he senses that it's like now with the science has been doing for the last 50 years, maybe more really. I mean, since 1950, trying to find a unified field theory. You see, what does it mean? What do you mean? How do they know it exists? They don't know what it is. But the answer is, the knowledge of science leads to the conclusion that it's out there. See. So man has an amazing tool in his mind. He could know what exists, and he could know what doesn't exist, and even though he doesn't know it, he could know that it exists. And that's the same exact thing, That the whole Yadus is based on this concept. That's Tzelem Elokim. But that kind of knowledge cannot be described as Ladov Gavol. That's not... Dafkabo can describe when the knowledge is of a thing. You have a knowledge of an object. Then you can say between this thing and between that thing, the person could be Dafik in a concept of relativity, because relativity understands, you see, and it can be attached to it. But there cannot be any dvekus between something which you don't know. You only know that it's there, but you can't identify the entity. Then there can't be any dvekus, but what kind of dvekus is there? There's no entity. Dvekus means two entities that are bound together. Okay? That is correct. That is the mistake, by the way, of all, you say, the messianic religions. It's a mistake of all religions besides Yadus. And it's basically, at its root, is Avodah Zarah. It's Avodah Zarah. What is the Ovid of Avodah Zarah trying to do, basically? What is he trying to do? Why does he make this the statue, the form, the image? Why does he do it? The answer is because he's trying precisely to do this. He's trying to cling to something. You see, an object. He's trying to quantify the object that he believes in. That's what he's trying to do. He wants exactly. He wants, yeah, right. That's what he's trying to do. And that is the Yisod of Yadus. That's what the world says. The world says monotheism. They say one God. Oh, one God. That's not what it means. It's a whole. It's a concept. The concept of oneness means that he's beyond. It's not a numerical oneness. Not a numerical oneness. It means oneness means he's beyond. He's not subject to the accident of quantity. He's not subject to quantity. Okay. When you're coming to the basic dimensions of the human mind, you can't explain it. It's impossible to explain it. Because what are you going to use to explain it? You can only say, that's what it is. You can recognize it. You can't do anything more than recognition. There's no way to go beyond it. Because there's no analysis in the world that can ever go beyond that. That was a mistake I told you last time of the later philosophers, the modern philosophers. They think they can explain the human mind. But what are they using to explain it? They're using something beyond. So whatever their explanation is, that's not the human mind. You understand what I'm saying? Can't be. It's a logical impossibility. The only thing said about the human mind is you can recognize certain truths about it. The person's saying, that's true. But he cannot explain it. Can you explain why man can sense that there's a theoretical world beyond the physical? How can you explain? What are you going to use as I said last time with the refrigerator? It has to fit into a greater framework. Where are you going to get the greater framework from? It's impossible. You know what I say? This is it. You have to come to the bottom line. Sooner or later, that's it. There's no more explanations. You see, the amazing is that there's another side to the amazing. There's two amazing things about the Daf Kabbalah. One is that you see how Yadus veered away from the whole all these problems that the other religions have because they didn't recognize this sublime idea of what it means by Vegas Bakarish Bracha. That's one side of the coin. But the other side of the coin is also interesting. It's also interesting. It means to say that Dveikus with the Gavra of a Talmud Chacham is a different kind of a relationship. That's also amazing. So Dveikus with the Gavra of a Talmud Chacham is a different kind of relationship. It means to say in such a relationship, even though it's an emotional one, but there's something in there. There's something in that relationship that is bringing the person close to God. It's a different kind of relationship. Emotional. It's an amazing thing. That's right. It's his personality. His personality. I don't want to get into the emotion. It's bringing not just emotionally. Not just it's bringing his personality closer to God. You see? Even though it's an emotional relationship, because you say, look, the person has emotions, and the emotions are not his essence. So you'll say, so what's the difference? I have an emotional relationship with my friend, or if I have an emotional relationship with a Talmud Chacham? Same kind of experience. No, Yadav says it's a different kind of experience. Because the Gavra of the Talmud Chacham, his essence is Chachma, and your emotional relationship with him is a different expression. It's something which brings your personality closer to God. And amazing. That's equally amazing, because the pasuk or the davka bo, and we always say, what is the greatness of Yadus? The greatness of Yadus lies in one thing, that Yadus is an unbelievable combination of the most abstract philosophical ideas and also the most profound and accurate psychological ideas. That's what Yadus did. Yadus is an unbelievable combination of both. And what Yadus is saying that on a philosophical plane, the Daf Kabbalah is amazing because it outruled the Chiyev Shalom and Daf B'Shechina. But it's equally, the other side of the coin is equally amazing, namely that Yadus recognized the psychology of a human being and said that a person that's involved in the psychological experience of friendship, if it's with his friend, it's one thing. But with a Talmud Chacham, the personality is being drawn to God by that very relationship. It's a different kind of relationship. Sure, it's emotional, but it's different. It's different in terms of the personality. In one case, the personality is just giving vent to emotions, you see. In the other case, the personality is giving vent to emotions, but the personality is being drawn to God. That's a little difficult. It's an amazing, amazing passage. There are two sides to the coin over there. Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, you hit another chazal. The Gemara in Pesachim says that the Am Ha'aretz, all the Daf Mentesim Beis, a lot of Gemara's about the Am Ha'aretz there. So the Gemara says that the Am Ha'aretz has a hatred for the Talmud Chacham. As a matter of fact, the Gemara says that the Am Ha'aretz' hatred for the Talmud Chacham is greater than the anti-Semites' hatred for Jews. And we know how great that is. And that's what Chazal say. So you see, it means to say that the that's the other side of the coin. That in terms of the psychology, the other side is true as well. That a person who is on a low level, the Amoritz, the boor, despises. He can't tolerate such a relationship. His whole essence goes against it. I mean, you're right about that. I mean, you're right. That's a good point. That's what Rabbi Myers is saying. What is the mushul of Eish Ochla? What is the mushul of Eish Ochla? Eish Ochla means that any person that tries to approach God as an entity will be consumed. Is immediately consumed. That's what it means. So that's why, the ideas, the common ideas that people have of Yadis are totally corrupt, basically. And the ideas of Dveikus, where people sit around and sing songs and think that through this type of emotional experience, they have in their mind some kind of idea of God that they're attaching these emotions to, that's completely against the Torah. That's completely against what the Torah says. Then Chazal should have said, "L'davka v'chiyev shaladim l'dav v'shchina in." Sit around, sing songs, and then feel the clinging to God. No such thing. What I'm saying to you about the relationship with the Talmud Chacham, the person has such a relationship, it's a different experience. I really can't explain it more. I mean, you have to be able to sense it, because it is an experiential phenomenon. You know what I'm saying? I could describe it, but the fact that this is true about the human psyche is something that you have to be able to sense. It means that a person feels close to Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's a different kind of experience. In that relationship, is the personality is being drawn to the Shekhinah. Doesn't mean what some people think, that to make the Talmud Chacham God, that's again a Vatazar. That's not what it means. It means that through this kind of attachment to this kind of a Gavra, in that relationship, God is reflected, and the personality is drawn to God. It's an unbelievably deep psychological truism. You have to know what it means. Yeah. It's a kind of a merging of the philosophical, somehow or other, the abstract philosophical. The emotions transcend. In other words, they start off, so to speak, with the person. But since the gavra is his essence is chokhmah, the emotions make a transition into the world of the abstract. That's what it means, basically. That's the best way I could describe it. In other words, it starts off as you're befriending the Talmud Chacham, you see? So it's an emotional thing. You like him, he's a nice person, he's friendly, he's warm, he's jovial, you like his personality. But that's the beginning of the relationship. But then through that medium, the emotions transcend into the realm, become attached to a higher realm. It's approaching the experience of Avas Hashem. It's really the closest experience to Avas Hashem. It's the closest experience to Avas Hashem. See, Avas Hashem is the Chochmas Hashem per se. You see? And the Chochmas Hashem per se, but this is lower. But it also it is hitting it's drawing the emotions to that source. It's the closest you can get to Avas Hashem. Dveikus Bashem, according to the definition of Chazal, is the closest you can get to Avas Hashem without chochmah. It's not speaking. It's not an experience of chachma. It's not. You say you do business with some chachma. It's mundane. It's not really, it doesn't mean you're involved in a sugya with the Talmud Chacham. That's what it's learning, that's Avos Hashem. It's mundane, but this mundane is drawing the individual close, his emotions as close as possible to Avos Hashem. That's what it means. And true, Yizor b'gachalten shelo sichove means, because the Talmud Chacham functions, his experiences and his psyche revolves around circling a different orbit, so to speak. You know, it's in a different kind of a center that moves the Talmud Chacham. So you are coming from an emotional center. You have to be careful when you're going into with the Talmud Chacham, that if you don't go in precisely, you're going to get damaged. That's what it means. But a person as a Chacham knows how to deal with the Talmud Chacham. He can experience a friendship with the Talmud Chacham. That's a good question. I mean, the question is a good, very good question. Question is, what about a Talmud Chacham himself? What is he supposed to do? Supposed to be in a dabek with another Talmud Chacham? Is that what it means? I mean, I'm asking a question. Is that what it means? Is he supposed to be in a dabek with another Talmud Chacham? I mean, if you take a look, let's take a look at the Rambam's formulation in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. This would be a very good. Very good way. We can discuss it philosophically. It's very nice, but let's take a look at something more concrete. How does the Rambam formulate the mitzvah of lidavek b'talmid chachamim? Okay, Hilchas Deis Perek Vav Mitzvah Beis Halacha Beis. Mitzvah saseh lidavek b'chachamim v'talmideihem kidei lilmod mimaaseihem ki inyan shenemar uvo sidbak. The Rambam says, "V'chiyef shel lo adam lidavek b'shchino, it's impossible." Or lekacham lechachomim b'firish mitzvah zu. They explain the mitzvah. He davek b'chachomim v'talmideihem. It's a different principle. It's really a principle. It's a principle, a deep principle in human psychology. That's what the mitzvah is. That's what the mitzvah is all about. Lefichach tzorech adam lishtadel sheyisa bas talmid chacham. The yasi vito l'tamid chacham, v'lecho v'lishtos in tamid chachamim, v'lasos parkematya l'tamid chacham, u'lischaber lohin b'chol minei chibor shenema l'dof kabal, v'chein tzivu chachamim, v'omru, v'evi misavek ba'afa regleim v'shose batzomas divreim. You see, essentially, he says v'shose batzomas divreim, according to the Rambam, is not just an intellectual phenomenon. But v'shosa batzomas devreya means that it results from the chashivas that he has for the Talmud Chacham. What would you say for the Rambam? The Rambam holds that it's incumbent upon one Talmud Chacham to be medabek with another Talmud Chacham?
Yeah.
You think so? Now, lomot mimaaseihem means to learn perfection. It means to learn, because that's how he learns perfection. It draws him to God. Why? Because this is how he learns perfection. Maaseya means perfection. Okay. That's the purpose of the mitzvah. That's the purpose of in other words, what the Rambam is saying is the mitzvah. Yeah, good. Yeah. I want to tell you. Now, Rabbi, may I mention an important point? Because the Rambam says kidei lilmod mimaaseihem, which means that there's a purpose, there's a function there. That's correct. It means to say just to have this experience, even though the experience of befriending the Talmud Chacham draws a person to God. That experience itself is not the objective. So what? So that kind of an experience is not enough. I mean, so what? So it's true when he's friendly with the Talmud Chacham, it draws his personality to God. But that draw, if you stop there, it'll be nothing. It's absolutely zero. It's nothing. It's only because through that he climbs the ladder to reach God through Avos Hashem. Okay. That's correct. I mean, that's an important point also. That's important. It doesn't mean that just this experience, a person working, I enjoyed the Talmud Chacham today, so I enjoyed having a relationship with God, that's it. It's nothing. It's a ladder. It's something which draws the person, directs his energies, and it draws him to the next step. The next step is Avos Hashem. Yes. So therefore, it would have, well, how does it appear? But look at the end, we can philosophize. But what does it appear from Lashon Haram? What I want to say, I missed your question. The reason I want this, I want to know, I mean, you know, Kedash don't want, but what is Lashon Haram or Mashma? Is Lashon Haram Mashma that the Talmidei Chachamim are exempt from this mitzvah or not? What do you say? Because the Rambam did not say, mitzvah say li dovek b'talmidei Chachamim. Mitzvah kol odom li dovek b'talmidei Chachamim. Doesn't say that. He says mitzvah sasei li dovek b'chachomim v'talmidehem. It means to say there's one group is chachomim v'talmidehem, and he's addressing another group. That's correct. So from the Rambam it would appear clear that he's exempt. Yeah, you're right. Well, that's what I brought on the Rambam. It's clear. I mean, you can't learn any other way. Otherwise, the Rambam would say mitzvah sasei li talmidei chachomim li dovek zu b'zu. He doesn't say that. In other words, the question would be, with Moshe Rabbeinu, was he mechuyif to go search out another Talmud Chacham and be medavik with him? No, it's impossible, because Moshe Rabbeinu, you can take the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, proves it clearly, right? What did I say? Moshe Rabbeinu was constantly medaber mashchina. He's constantly omer b'fnei Hashchina. So what are you going to say? He should stop being omer b'fnei Hashchina and go find a Talmud Chacham? This is ridiculous. So obviously, the halacha of lidovek b'talmidei Chachamim is a separate mitzvah, which is framed for an individual in a certain circumstance. It's a mitzvah. It's not the pshat. It's not the pshat. The question was to say that a Talmud Chacham is exempt from the mitzvah is an impossibility. That's true, because a Talmud Chacham is exempt from one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, because the entire mitzvah of the Torah. How is it possible? But what it means like this. What it means is that a person, an individual, a Talmud Chacham is viewed as a certain condition. There's a condition in a person that he's a Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham is a certain state. Is a state in the Gavra. So the mitzvah, you see, what it means is like this. There can, vis-a-vis this mitzvah, the Talmud, being a Talmud Chacham, represents a certain state of the Gavra. In other words, every Gavra is chayav in this mitzvah. And like Binyamin said, you mentioned, I mean, every person starts off in Amaretz. You became born in Talmud Chacham. So it means to say that the mitzvah is it's on every gavra. You can't have a gavra excluded from a mitzvah. So the mitzvah is on every single gavra, but the mitzvah is a conditional one. It's a conditional one. Because the whole mitzvah is to bring a person close to our Kadosh Baruch Hu. So insofar as it serves that function, insofar as a person is in a certain condition, he's chayiv in the mitzvah. If he's not in that condition, he's pata from the mitzvah. So that's why a great Talmud Chacham who's involved in the Avas Hashem constantly is not mechuyif to stop Avas Hashem and go look around for another Talmud Chacham. That's absurd. It's crazy. The mitzvah is a conditional one. The mitzvah is on every gavra, but it's conditional. And the condition is, if a person is in the state in which he is not involved in Avas Hashem, and so far as he's not involved in Avas Hashem, he's not on that level, so then he must use this medium, the medium of the Talmud Chacham, to direct his channels emotions to the proper area, so that what's going to happen, so that he perfects himself, it's a means of greater perfection, where he can have, till he reaches a level where he's on a first-hand relationship with a Kaddish Baruch Hu through Avas Hashem. That's what it means. That's exactly what it means. It's an interesting thing. The Avas David the Yehonason, it means Avas She'ein Et Tliya B'davar. It means because you're not looking. See, if a person is corrupt, you can only have an Avas She'ein Et Tliya B'davar. Because a person is corrupt, is interested in he's only interested in what the other person can offer him. I mean, I'm sorry, I only have an Avas Tliya B'davar. It has to be clear, though, because that's the whole essence of the thing. The whole essence of his philosophy is that he's selfishness. But an Ava She'ein Et Tliya B'davar means that you enjoy the person for what he is, and you feel an Ava towards that person. Okay? That can be towards the Talmud Chacham as well. A person can not because what the Talmud Chacham does for you, but because of the fact that you appreciate his perfection. Appreciation of the man's perfection. It gives you a certain ava for the person. It's a different thing. It's not what I'm talking about here. That's the ava Shane Cleaver Dover. That's ava's Dover Yonison. So it's interesting. And it's an emotional thing. It's an emotional experience. How do you know it's an emotional? Because Dar Melech said, Nifla'asa avas cholim me'avas nashim. What did he mean? He meant this is a different kind of experience, and to me, that experience was even more emotionally enjoyable than the romantic experience. Amazing thing. Very few people, only a perfected person can understand what David Melech means, because an unperfected person never has such an experience. I mean, the only type of ava that he has is ava kolim me'avas. Okay, the average person does not know what this means. He only understands an ava shetliya b'davar. He doesn't even know what it means, ava shetliya b'davar, because he doesn't have such an experience. Every person to him is just another means for his own. It's a utilitarian kind of relationship. It's only for his what utility, what benefit can he derive from the other person. That's what it is. He may deny that, but the bottom line is that's exactly what it is. That's why you see friendships break up and this and that. That's what Chazal mean. It's not self-lascarian. Because sooner or later, since it's basically selfish, sooner or later the other person's going to cross his tracks and he's not worth it anymore and he finds somebody. Whatever happens, there's so many things. But eventually it's going to be it's nothing. It gives the appearance of a real friendship. They're business partners. They're friendly and they share with their families and everything. But the bottom line is because the other person has a utilitarian function. And the moment that function ceases, or he finds a better opportunity, so then that's the end of this whole thing. It's gone, like it never existed. But the appreciation of another individual, the appreciation of perfection, that's what Chazal say. What did Chazal say? Chazal say when the story was in Brachas, that by Rabbi Yechanan, I believe it was Rabbi Yechanan, came to visit Rabbi Yechanan, and he was before his patira, so they asked him why he's crying. So I say, Al-Hai Shufra, this beauty that is going to lie in the ground. What does it mean? What does it mean, this beauty? Every person has to die? I mean, what does it mean, this beauty is going to lie in the ground? It means that the Gemara says, Al-Dor Vadai Kabachas. That's something to cry about. It means you take a person like a Biechen, and such a perfected individual, a marvel, and you look at this individual, you see, like, what it takes to take the raw material and to develop a Rabbi Yechanan, perfect something, such a beautiful thing, and this thing should lie in the ground, just totally, totally lost forever. That's Aldov Adai Kabachas. That's a loss. You see, that's exactly, it's the same kind of a concept. Same concept. That's Avo She'en Atli B'Dav. You see? The question I'm raising is that a mitzvah, or it's an experience? Is it doesn't say in the pasuk, there's no chiyuv, there's no mitzvah say for such a thing. You say maybe v'haftal recha kamocha, but that's different. That's different because v'haftal recha kamocha is not just a perfected person. It means anybody. Yeah, it doesn't. There's no mitzvah. It doesn't say by avor. She ain't a clear bedover. It doesn't say that it's mitzvah to have such a kind of a relationship. It doesn't say it's a self-alaskayim. It doesn't say it's a mitzvah. So the question is there some kind of a kiyum in that or not? What's the answer? What do you think? I would say like this. I would say it's not a chiyuv. There's no mitzvah like that. It's not a chiyuv. But I would say it's a mark of a perfected individual. It's a mark of a perfected. It's the human personality on a perfected level. It's one of the experiences that is only possible for the human personality on a perfected level. It's not a mitzvah. It's a sign of perfection. A perfected individual can have such an experience. That's what it means. It's a legitimate experience. It's not an experience that a person should deny if it comes his way. But there's no mitzvah in it. But it's a sign of perfection. It's a mark of perfection. And so I believe in Pirkei Avos, when we took up that Chazal, I believe we said that no one could really have a true friend. That's what the Chazal was saying. There's no such thing as a true friend unless there's perfection. Because that perfection can't be friendship. Because otherwise, if there's no recognition of an objective perfection, and that's why you recognize your friend because he reflects that perfection, if you don't have that concept, so then the only other relationship is because of mutual benefits. mutual benefit, so it's going to be to live it up. That's the that's what I believe it is. Not a mitzvah, but it's a sign of perfection. Knei l'chachover is different. Knei l'chachover, the Rambam says, different levels of chaverim. But knei l'chachover is really utilitarian, actually. It's utilitarian in a sense. It means to say that you can't function without a chaver. So there's a chaver l'deya. It means to say, if I have a chaver, to myself is no good. If I have a chaver l'deya, we compare notes and we compare thoughts and ideas. That's a necessary. It's necessary. That's a different concept. That's necessary in order to a different reason why that's necessary in order to attain perfection. Because you can't attain perfection in solitude. That's impossible. Yeah, this is against such a cosmic person going away alone. These mystical religions have these kind of ideas. Yeah, there's no so. You can't by yourself. You can't become perfected. Careful about it. But you must have a chaver because there must be an interaction. A human being requires an interaction, and a chaver l'deya is the highest level. But a chaver l'deya is not necessarily the same. And you can have a chaver l'deya who you're not friendly with also. He's a chaver l'deya. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you really emotionally enjoy him. You don't have to emotionally enjoy him. He's a chaver l'deya. It means to say that I have an idea. I know this is the guy I have to talk to when I have these. I have a problem. This kind of problem I have to talk to him. He's got a good mind and he knows how to work things out. And he'll give me an idea. We'll work it out together. It's a chaver l'deya. That's a different concept altogether. Nothing to do with this. This is an emotional experience. Okay. That's an important question. In relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can only use what the Torah allows you to use. Can't use, because it's based upon only God really knows the human mind, and therefore everything is precisely worked out that it doesn't lead to avodah zarah. Can't use just any emotion. You could perhaps say the emotion, like the Rambam says, that a person walking to the Mikdash, that's a legitimate emotion, because his awe is tied to the idea of Chachmas Hashem, the Sanhedrin was there, and everything was done. The avodah reflected the Shechina. But only what the Torah sanctions. You can't use any emotions you want to relate to God. Only those things. That's why the pasuk had to say David. That's why I say David Tamid Chacham. Why? Because he can't. The Torah doesn't give you a permit on it. So you can't do it. Question is, why do you say Vatam Avekim Hashem Elokeinu Chayim Kol Chamayom before Talmud Torah? You should really say Vayad Var Meila Shnechem Tzav Chayim Ol Vavacha. That would seem to be more appropriate a pasuk. Vatay Sir Hashem Elokeinu, right? But the reason I think is very good because you see the halacha is Talmud Chacham Kara Rishon. Talmud Chacham has to read first. Okay, now we know you don't want to make a fight. So got it. But basically Talmud Chacham Kara Rishon. So what does it show you? It shows you that the mitzvahs Talmud Torah, the mitzvahs, Kriyas HaTorah B'tzibur, was really meant to include two mitzvahs. It was meant to reflect the mitzvah of Avas Hashem and Limud HaTorah, of course, those mitzvahs, but it's also meant to reflect the mitzvah of Lidavek B'Talmid HaChacham. That's why Talmud Chacham Kara Rishon. The mitzvah B'tzibur was supposed to reflect, you wouldn't think it reflects that mitzvah, because that's why you say that pasuk, to show that the Kriyas HaTorah was formulated to reflect that mitzvah also. Where is it reflected? Talmud Chacham Kara Rishon. So it addresses a person's attention. It draws a person's attention to the Talmud Chacham, and it's supposed to be really, it's supposed to arouse the person's desire for the mitzvah of Sidbak. Okay. The Rav one time mentioned that there's no Zmiris for Yontif. There's only Zmiris for Shabbos. You see, and that's not just an accident, not because they forgot to put together Zmiris, but because the pasuk Mizmor Shir LiYom HaShabbos. So the Rav said that you're only allowed to sing to Shabbos. You're not allowed to sing to Yontif. There's no, you're not allowed to do it. So you need a matir. But there again, that's what we say, that the Torah is based on the most profound knowledge and understanding of the human psyche. It means Shabbos Bereshis reflects the Shechina. So there's nothing wrong, there's no danger in singing Zmiris to Shabbos. But Yontif is a little different. Because Yontif, Yisrael HaMekadosh to Yontif. Shabbos is Mekudosh V'Omeid. So Shabbos is okay to sing Zmiris to. Because Shabbos Mekudosh V'Omeid, so that's why there's no danger, it reflects HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Yontif would not be the same. Because Yontif, since the Bezdin is Mekadosh Yisrael V'Azmanim, Yisrael HaMekadosh V'Azmanim, so then man's involved already, can't sing Zmiris. Can't sing Zmiris to that young.
The following ideas belong to the Shir on Bechira.
The answer to the problem of Bechira, he really can't have a conception of God either. Because that's the exact same thing. That it's beyond those tools and those mechanisms which are used for analysis. The question is that when you say Schar V'Onesh, so you always think that the person is the cause of his own undoing. All right. Now you're in the world of causality. You see. Yeah. But again, there's the same mistake. When you use that word cause, you can't use it in the same manner as you understand causality. You can't use it that way. You could say what you should say is he's the source. He's the source. It's since it's a phenomenon that cannot be examined in the light of all the knowledge that the human mind can grasp from the world of causality, which is the whole realm of knowledge, you can only say that he's the source of his state. But that's it. You can't say more than that. The word cause is bad. You can say there is no other cause, no external cause besides himself that is responsible for this. It's a unique process. The process is one that defies our ability to understand, because our ability to understand is limited to the world of causality. I mean, there are many forms to the question, but it's the same question. The question is, well, how does free will work? That question is an intrinsic contradiction. Because if you ask me how it works, you want to know the cause. There is no cause. There is no causality there. You can't say, how does it work? How does it work implies how do things work? How does the clock work? The clock works by determinants, by cause. You can't say how this works. That question is inappropriate. Okay. Free will does not mean that you can understand the process. That, by definition, you can't understand. It just means there are no other determinants. That's it.